To keep the peace, to pioneer the future. This is the mission of your AAF. The Army Air Forces, in cooperation with the American Broadcasting Company, presents your AAF, a weekly report to the American people on its continuing operation throughout the world today and its adventures and research, which are pioneering for your better world tomorrow.
Years ago, American airmen circled the globe for the first time. Later in this program, we'll bring you a complete round-the-world coverage on today's historic globe-circling flight. But right now, let's look back over the years as the All Soldier Orchestra takes to the air with Swanee. Colleges and universities are playing host on a large scale to a new kind of student, veterans getting a free education under the GI Bill of Rights. What do these soldier students think of the educational deal America has given them? For a frank report on veterans at school, your AAF takes you by Army wire recorder to New York University.
This is your AAF reporter, Corporal Paul Duval, speaking to you from the Students' Lounge at New York University, where approximately 3,500 veterans are going back to school this fall under the GI Bill of Rights. Mr. Elwood Kastner, Registrar and Director of the Veterans Counseling Service, is with me, ready to answer some of the questions about education under the GI Bill. Questions that are uppermost in the minds of GIs and parents. Mr. Kastner, some people seem to feel that not enough GIs are taking advantage of these educational provisions of the GI Bill. How do you folks feel about that here at NYU?
Well, I think that 3,500 figure speaks for itself. That's 13% of our student population. Incidentally, Corporal,
yes?
A goodly percentage of the veterans are former Air Force men.
Oh, that's very encouraging to hear, Mr. Kastner. And how are these ex-airmen fitting into the pattern of university life? You know, there must be quite a gap to bridge between Army life and campus activities.
There is, but you'd be amazed at the way these veterans buckle down to work. They've got an objective, and in most cases, they don't let minor difficulties, such as living and working with relatively younger students, get in their way.
Is the university doing anything to help the veteran with his problems?
Well, in the first place, let me say this. From the beginning, we've treated the veteran as a man and not as a curiosity. He is no more of a problem than any other student. To meet any special educational or personal problems he does have, we maintain a veterans counseling service. Suppose we talk to some of these veterans here and let you get their reactions to university life.
Very, very good idea.
Excuse me, gentlemen. This is Corporal Duval, a radio reporter for your AAF, who would like to ask you some questions about your work here.
Well, my name is Sam Klausner.
How are you?
This is Roy Danahy and Cy Mills.
I'm glad to meet you, fellas. You know, we've been discussing the way you men have adjusted yourselves to college life after several years in the Army. Did you find it was difficult at first? How about you, Lieutenant? I notice you're still in uniform, and that's pretty unusual around here, I believe.
Well, perhaps I am an unusual case. You see, I got off the plane Monday morning, registered the same day, and started classes the next morning.
I see.
I haven't quite had a chance to get any civilian clothes yet. So this is all pretty new to me. I think these boys can tell you a little more about it than I can. Ex-Sergeant Danahy over here has already completed a year's work. Suppose you tell them how you made out, Roy.
Well, it was kind of tough getting into the swing of things at first. You see, I'm 32 years old and married. I'd been in the South Pacific and had to go to classes with kids just out of high school.
We do with that now.
But I buckled down and managed to get a B average last year.
B average? That's better than I did in my best days. Well, it looks like you sort of really solved the problem of adjustment. Well, tell me, how about finances? Can you fellows support yourselves on the allotment you receive each month?
Well, I happen to be fortunate there. I expect to receive compensation for service incurred disability. Most of the fellows who draw $50 a month under the GI Bill of Rights live at home. Otherwise, it's a pretty tight squeeze for them in a city like New York on $50 a month.
Yes, I know what you mean there. How about you, Danahy?
I'm drawing disability payments, too. Being married, it would have been difficult for me to return to school unless I drew that extra pay for disability. Besides, my wife works, which helps plenty.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It certainly does. But tell me, would you have completed your education if you hadn't earned the right to attend college at government expense as a result of your Army service?
No, I don't believe I would have been able to afford the expense involved in getting that master's degree, which is what I'm ultimately aiming for.
I'm sure that there are a lot of prospective dischargees listening in right now, and I know they'd appreciate a word of advice from you fellas. Could you offer any advice based on your experience here at NYU?
My advice would be directed mainly to those men with dependents. They've got to think twice about their income under this plan. Better take a part-time course of study with outside employment than try to support yourself and dependents on $75 a month.
Officer, how about you?
Well, I think as far as the fellows will have to make up their own minds, but I earnestly believe this is a chance of a lifetime for those that are seriously interested in education. I'm single and getting along on the $50 a month, whereas I used to get $246 to be B-24 Navigator. But I figure getting an education will pay off in the long run. And there are thousands of other ex-soldiers here at NYU who feel the same way about it that I do.
Well, thank you very, very much for your advice, fellas. This is your AAF reporter, Corporal Paul Dubov, who has brought you a discussion of the educational provisions of the GI Bill of Rights from the campus of New York University. We return you now to your AAF.
From New York to Paris, C-54s fly in 15 hours. From Tokyo to Washington, the big B-29s wing their way in 26. This program, to which you are listening, recorded by Armed Forces Radio Service, travels to the lonely GI in the remote and forgotten corners of the globe. For them and for you, Sergeant Bob Carroll considers the situation and sums it up in two words.
Small world filled with millions of people, yet I found you. Or should I really say, you came my way. So many places, just one would do. We traveled very far, but here we are. I'm not surprised, I'm sure this had to be. Surprised, I'm sure, misled to be. For now I know I could love only you, and you could love only me. Small world, filled with millions of people, yet I could find the heart that is tied to mine.
Ago, a giant C-54 of the Air Transport Command wheeled to a halt at National Airport in Washington, D.C., thus completing ATC's first regularly scheduled weekly round-the-world flight. For a worldwide report on this precedent-shattering global journey, let's go back to the beginning with our AAF correspondent who saw the start of the flight in Washington last week. Go ahead, Sergeant Hal Brown.
This is your AAF reporter, Technical Sergeant Hal Brown, speaking to you by Army Wire Recorder from the ATC terminal of the National Airport at Washington, D.C., where in a few moments the first regularly scheduled round-the-world flight will take off. This flight, christened the Globster, will be on a regular weekly run covering more than 23,000 miles in 151 hours. It is significant that this inaugural World Aerial Service starts its maiden trip just 21 years after the completion of the first world flight, which took a group of Army flyers 155 days. Although scores of ATC planes have flown around the world during the war, this is the first time that a rigid weekly schedule will be adhered to. The Globster will depart from Washington every Friday afternoon to link military installations, carrying passengers, cargo, and mail. Throughout the flight, your AAF reporters are standing by to bring you a first-hand account of the Globster as she sets down at legendary ports throughout the world. And for storybook names like Casablanca, Tripoli, Karachi, Calcutta will become as familiar to the traveler as St. Louis, Chicago, Miami, or New York.
The Globster has taxied to the end of the runway, cleared with the tower, and here it comes, thundering into the sky on the first leg of this globe-circling flight.
This is Major Bob Eckhouse, your AF reporter, speaking from the Air Transport Command's airbase in Casablanca. I am standing up in the control tower here, awaiting the arrival of the Globster, giant C-54 airliner making the first scheduled round-the-world flight. It's early evening here, and the mile-long runway is carefully illuminated with little white lights, which make it clearly visible for landing aircraft. In the distance, we can see the outline of the Atlas Mountains, directly behind which lies the vast expanse of the Western Sahara Desert. Approximately 22 hours ago, passengers on this globe-circling transport were watching traffic on Washington's Pennsylvania Avenue. Now, as they approach Casablanca, they are greeted by the sight of desert, camels, burnous Arabs, and veiled Fatimas. Our plane has been sighted now, and I think I can see red and green wing lights. Yes, he's circling the field now. I think they're talking with a pilot. Let's go over and see if we can pick up some of the conversation directly.
Manager 054, downwind lake, you are cleared number 2 in the pattern. 1B17 on final approach. Surface wind northeast 7. Call on base leg, over.
Manager 054, roger.
The Air Transport Command's first scheduled round-the-world flight has just landed here in Casablanca. In a few hours from now, the plane will be taking off for AAA Cairo and points east.
Won't you join us for breakfast here in China, along with passengers of the Globster, who have just entered the dining room to have a bite to eat before continuing their journey. They only have a limited amount of time, so we'll talk to them while they eat. By the way, chow this morning consists of a very appetizing menu for hungry travelers, including famous Chinese eggs, strictly fresh, better known around here as eggers. And now, here is Colonel C.B. Allen, Deputy Assistant Chief of Staff of ATC Operations. When we crossed Iran on the way over, the temperature hit 118 one day in Abadan. It's a far cry from what it is here today. How was it when you went through, Colonel?
Very comfortable. It's the season of the year, and we arrived at night.
And how did you find the trip over the hump?
The trip was excellent most of the way. We struck moderate turbulence for about 20 minutes and some scattered thunderstorms, but the whole trip was swell.
And where did you have your last meal?
At Calcutta with General Turner and Colonel Newton. A very good meal. As good as this one.
I see. Was that early last night?
Yes, that was. Shortly after dark, we arrived.
Well, we certainly hope the rest of your trip will prove most enjoyable. Word has just come in from the flight line that the Globster is about ready for its next lap to Manila. Looks like you're way ahead of schedule. And now, with the crew ready and waiting, we wish you a pleasant journey and happy landing.
This is Lieutenant Jack Andrew with your AAF in the Philippines and picking up the Air Transport Command Global Flight, the Globster, from historic Nichols Field in Manila. The giant silver C-54 has just landed 20 minutes ahead of schedule, and the passengers have left for a tour of Manila. Meanwhile, Air Transport Command ground personnel are transferring luggage, food, and equipment to the Bataan Meteor, the next C-54, which will fly them on their next lap to Guam in the Marianas.
This is your AAF reporter, Corporal Ed Little on Guam. The Globster is standing in front of the sprawling Air Transport Command passenger terminal on Harmon Field. Soon it will take off for Kwajalein, Johnston Island, and Hawaii. It has so far covered 13,750 miles of its trip ahead of schedule and has about 9,400 miles to go. Here on Guam, it's 2:45 o'clock Wednesday morning. In Washington, it's 11:45 o'clock Tuesday morning. We've carried our wire recording microphone inside the airplane, and we have a surprise for the passengers. May I present Miss Marion Aguida Johnston, a charming native of Guam. She has something to say to you. All right, Miss Johnston, go ahead.
Buenos dias. Magmagun and makatam to Guam. The nanangamun is an altalumagi.
And what does that mean in English, Miss Johnston?
In English, it means good morning. Welcome to Guam, and we hope you come again soon.
Well, I'm sure they would if they had any assurance that you'd meet them. Have you any more to say?
Yes. As a token of regard for my people, I have brought you some fresh food.
And here in a basket of woven palm leaves are bananas and papayas, gifts from your American cousins on Guam. In the tomorrow that will find this spot an air crossroads of the world, you'll discover that they are most friendly and hospitable. And that's our cue. That's all we'll have time for now. Miss Johnston, do you want to say goodbye to them?
Adios, Mr. Kimmon. Goodbye till we meet again.
And to that, we add our best wishes for a very pleasant journey.
Wednesday morning, Hawaiian Standard Time. The announcement you heard a few seconds ago came from the loudspeakers of the beautiful modern Air Transport Command Terminal next door to Pearl Harbor. During the two-hour stop before this giant C-54 heads for San Francisco on its final and longest overwater lap back to the United States, a true Hawaiian welcome has been planned. Here in the comfort of the lounge, you can hear the strains of the beautiful Hawaiian music. The lovely hula girls are swaying in their ancient native dances. enjoying the entertainment with the passengers and the ATC official hosts are General Richardson, General Parker, and Territorial Governor Steinbeck. And by my side, looking out from behind a glass of pineapple juice, is Mr. Fred Oltman, United Press correspondent on the plane. When did you leave Kwajalein, Mr. Oltman?
Oh, that's a tough one to answer. Some people said we left there tonight. The rest of the boys thought we left tomorrow morning.
Well, that sounds like a bit of trouble with the international dateline that you crossed flying from the Marshals.
Well, how'd you like to wake up and find that it was day after tomorrow? We left Kwajalein tonight. We get here this morning. Tomorrow is today. Today is yesterday. I don't know what yesterday is. It's very confusing.
Well, when you figure it out, let me know.
Now 2:03 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. This is your AAF reporter, Lieutenant Will Douglas, speaking to you from Hamilton Army Airfield in California. Our Army wire recorder is set up in the control tower, the point of contact for all incoming air traffic from the Pacific. A few minutes ago, we were alerted that the Globster was coming in over the Golden Gate. We're standing by now to pick up the actual landing instructions from tower to plane as the giant C-54 makes its first contact with the United States after circling the globe. There's the Globster now, coming in for the landing, on time and on schedule. We now transfer controls to the ramp, where your AAF reporter will bring you some of the reactions of the passengers and crew as they step off the plane.
This is Technical Sergeant Hal Brown speaking to you from the ATC passenger terminal. Last Friday, we watched the Globster take off from Washington, D.C., heading east toward Casablanca. And now, 5 days later, we are here at Hamilton Field in California, watching the Globster as she taxis to the unloading platform, having circled the globe. We're going to move our microphone into the terminal, so we may get a few reactions from the passengers and crew.
Here now is Inez Robb of International News Service and the American Broadcasting Company, who is the only woman aboard. Miss Robb, how do you feel?
Well, I feel a little weary, but I haven't enough strength left to finish the course.
Looking back on the flight, what impressed you most?
Well, I think the thing that impressed me the very most was the fact that we buzzed the Taj Mahal. I thought that was rather exciting to get as close to it as we did in a big plane like the Globster.
Thank you, Miss Robb. And now here is Colonel M.S. White, the flight surgeon, who also made the entire trip. Sir, I understand you used this first Globster as sort of a laboratory which would enable you to test the reactions of the passengers. What did you find out?
That is true. I was rather pleasantly surprised, as I expected by the time we hit this point, we would have the need of a doctor. On the other hand, I find that the entire passenger list that made the flight is in better condition than when they started.
I understand you had quite a few passengers of prisoners of war, liberated men that were brought back here. Was any reaction to them?
Yes, there were a full plane load of them completed the passenger list at the Philippines. They all made the trip uneventfully and certainly were glad to get back to the States.
What is your personal feeling toward the future of the Globster run?
Well, it's not contemplated that any one individual will make a similar tour as we have done. I'm sure that all will find passenger comfort at its highest peak, no matter what distance they travel.
Thank you, Colonel White. From ports of call around the world, your AAF has brought you a word picture of the Globster's maiden flight. Tomorrow and each Friday thereafter, a Globster will depart on the now regularly scheduled round-the-world aerial service. We return you now to your AAF in New York.
To the Air Transport Command for a flight that has captured the imagination of all the world, to the Army Airways communication system which guided them around the world, And to all those men of vision who, by their pioneering in the sky, helped to make this flight a reality, a salute. Here at home this week, while the Globster winged its way around the world, the men of the Army Air Forces gratefully joined the nation in one extra hour of sleep as America swung back to standard time. And now from the orchestra, a vote of thanks with Time on My Hands. Keep the peace to pioneer the future. This is your AAF. During the last half hour, you've been listening to the official program of the Army Air Forces, your AAF. Join us next week for the singing voices and the all-soldier AAF orchestra, late news of scientific developments from our vast laboratories, and the continuing operations around the world of the Air Force, built and maintained by millions of Americans in and out of uniform, your AAF.
This is the American Broadcasting Company.